the Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You're right, fella.
Yeah, very well, thanks indeed, Justin. You, I hope.
Well, I'm all right, apart from feeling stiff from the weekend, trying to keep up with my kids on that one of those trampoline centre parks, you know, the thing where you go there, and I just couldn't do it. I came on the stairs today, aching with a bad knee, bad Achilles. I thought it's time to give that up. I was just disappointed, really. I thought I was doing quite well, but there we are.
You can't keep up with them, I'm afraid.
No, I know. So you mentioned before we come on, it's OPEC week, and so what are we likely to see, Malky? What's going to happen here?
Well, OPEC have a formal meeting twice a year, and this is the official meeting, which happens Thursday. And normally, the result of the OPEC meeting is certainly known to the key players in OPEC well before, and they don't like to have a long and drawn-out meeting. Normally, they'll expect to have a full meeting of everybody in the room, agree their policy statement, come out and meet the world's press and tell them, and then go home. And that's made slightly more difficult at the moment because OPEC is working with non-OPEC, which obviously is primarily Russia, and the relationships between Russia and Saudi Arabia are very strong. So, you know, I think there'll be various, even more sort of off-site meetings during the next two or three days between the sort of key players in OPEC and non-OPEC. The impression is that although some of the people and the Russians, the sort of prime people, are saying that because the oil price is reasonably firm, we can sort of pull back a little bit and produce a little more, which would be absolutely just what the market didn't want. So I expect the meeting to announce that the agreement between OPEC and non-OPEC is rolled over. At the moment, it's scheduled to expire at the end of March next year. I think that the market is probably expecting it to be rolled over for the whole of the year to the end of 2018, which would probably be, you know, very much in line with the best estimates. I mean, the oil price in quite good nick. At one stage last week, West Texas nearly got to $60, and Brent's 65. Right now they're just a bit off that, 58.5 and 63.5 respectively. But you know, if you told people about that in June when the oil price was $45, they'd have bitten your arm off. And $65 for Brent, even Sea Lion goes ahead and cruises through profitable production, especially given, as we've been talking about for a year or two now, you know, how much cost has been taken out of the industry. Yeah. So, you know, all these companies will be doing pretty well at the moment, and they expect the OPEC meeting to continue as it has before.
Yeah, I mean, what's your thoughts on these kind of talks, Mark? I mean, are you a fan of just letting the market does what it does, or do you think, you know, it can have a long-term beneficial effect, or, you know, or they just, you know, essentially singing into the wind there? I mean, what do you reckon?
Well, there's no doubt that the cartel, as it is, wouldn't work efficiently. And if you mean efficiently, you mean to get the right market price if it wasn't regulated one way or the other. Now, the point is that if you're saying that, you know, it should be just market forces, and then this is what happens when OPEC sort of breaks up and they just produce what they like, and if the Russians produce what they like and everybody else did, then the oil price would be back to $30. Now, if that's your idea of efficiency, that's just fine. But funnily enough, the world didn't, you know, when, you know, the oil price had been at 110, 115 and went down, in fact, went down all the way to 27, if you remember, the world didn't particularly like that because, you know, the oil producing nations were in terrible trouble and they weren't investing. And of course, you know, when the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and everybody else is not investing, then you know we had the problems that we did. You know, for right or for wrong, it seems that if you can get to a level of $55-$60 for oil, that makes it so happy enough for the producers and not dreadful for the consumers. Mm. I'm sure there are plenty of people who would say you ought to let market forces dictate it. At the moment, if that was the case, it would be $30 a barrel. Your call, really, but you know, OPEC has always been that one or two players have got what's called the marginal barrels. If you take enough oil off the, you know, if you can just be strong-willed enough to take the last few barrels off the marketplace, the price has to go up. As long as you don't, and overproduce, and if you don't overproduce, you'll keep the price up.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. It's just, it seems like you know this. When the price goes down, obviously it takes the supply out, doesn't it? It seems to work efficiently like that. I just any sort of market interventions on my thoughts is you know it's just a temporary fix, you know. But there we are. What do I know?
Yeah. Well, I mean the other thing is, of course, that what we're getting to the stage now is what I've been banging on about for 2 years now is that when the oil price came down, because the oil majors in particular have got huge dividends to which they have to be committed to, they take the capex out of the budget straight away. That's the one thing they can do. But it has about a 3 or 5 year lag. So if you take BP, for example, who Mad Dog 2, which is a big thing in the Gulf of Mexico, they cut that off completely. And you know, when it comes down to it, that was something which would have come on stream in 2020. Now, you know, they're putting it back on again, and it'll come on in 2025. But if you count up all the other things that were cancelled that were coming on stream between 2020 and 2025, mm-hmm. I think it's about $2 trillion worth of capex there. Yeah. So what happens is that, you know, although the oil companies say that's brilliant, we've cut 30% from our capex budgets, there won't be the oil that market was expecting to come through in those years, which will create a shortage and the price will go up again.
Yeah.
They'll probably invest more then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, leaving the macro behind, let's get the micro. What stocks are you looking at, Melky?
Well, I'm going to talk about two of the Trinidad stocks after last week's announcements. So Trinity Exploration and Production and Range Resources. Then one or two others after that briefly. Yeah. Trinity and Range were in discussions about the sale of Trinity's West Coast Trinidad assets to Range Resources. Range is suspended at the moment. And they announced at the end of last week that the deal was off, had fallen through for regulatory reasons. Obviously, disappointment because you know they were trying to reshuffle the assets, and Trinity was going to concentrate on its East Coast stuff. But the taking Trinity first, they had a number of bidders for this asset when they put it up for sale, and there's no doubt that they'll just they'll remarket it in the new year. It's an asset which is producing very well. It's not a problem asset at all. Mm-hmm. It's producing very well. It's contributing cash to the company. They were just trying to slim down a little and concentrate on their East Coast assets. So there's no hurry for the sale to be restarted straight away. It doesn't affect the my 2018 investment profile or economics at all. Those numbers are looking very positive indeed, and I would say that Trinity remains one of the most profitable players in the area in Trinidad, mm-hmm. and it's got probably the most upside. If you look at the numbers, they're clean, the highly highly profitable. The numbers they have brought down, like we were just saying, their cost base significantly in the last 3 years, which is why they're in such a good position coming out of this now. As for Range, they've still got a large onshore presence in Trinidad, so no worries there. They can concentrate putting all their money into their water flood program. They're also doing another acquisition in Trinidad, which is the drilling rig company. which is completing this week. So with their Indonesian, they've been very busy as well, so their Indonesian acquisition completed, the vote is this week on the shareholder vote for the drilling company is this week in Australia. I'm assuming that will go through. They've been suspended most of the year. I expect that to share to come back from suspension in early December. So, you know, quite these are, you know, two of the major players in Trinidad. It's a shame that the deal was didn't go through, but both companies in good nick. Trinity, very solid, most profitable, lots of upside from, you know, workovers and all the other bits and pieces. Plus, of course, they'll be drilling next year, so lots of upside for Trinity, and see how Range does when it returns from suspension.
Yeah, cool. All right, anything else, Marky?
Two very quick ones, or three possibly. I was looking at Cabot Energy the other day. Cabot used to be Northern Petroleum, and this one really was very, very close to getting into the end game a couple of years ago, and Keith Bush and his management team are taking this from almost the dead and buried and giving it the kiss of life, as it were. Mm-hmm. This company still has some acreage in Italy, which I don't rate very much, although they are farmed in with Shell there. But mainly what's happened here is that they've they found the new beginnings by some quite interesting onshore acreage in Canada, in Alberta. And they're just plugging away, adding a few barrels here and there. And they put an announcement out last week saying that they're adding another, you know, few hundred barrels here and there. I would expect this company might be producing 1,000 barrels a day before too long. They've got a very supportive backer here. They've got plenty of acreage to drill. And they're using some quite interesting production enhancement techniques to benefit that production. So if you might have a few people who used to be in Northern, have now got Cabot, not quite sure what it's all about. It's turning into quite an interesting play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know how that's how you said it. I've been saying it wrong. I've noticed a couple of people mention it on social media, and I thought it was Cabot, but Cabot is the way.
It could be. I could be just as wrong. I'm sort of going back to my school geography days, and I think he was an explorer.
Ah,
Cabot,
I see.
And I was probably told to call it Cabot, but if you know, if he was in the States, he'd probably Cabot.
Yeah. Well, I'll bow to your greater knowledge there, Malky.
Quick word on two little stocks, short word on two big stocks. Mm-hmm. Amerisur, who announced last week that production had commenced in their Llanos Basin acreage. This is their second oil field in Colombia, which is most interesting because, you know, so far most of the people have been concentrating on their Platanillo acreage, and there's lots to talk about there with drilling a number of wells and ongoing much better conditions down there. And of course, way up north in the Llanos Basin, where they're in with ONGC, they announced that production has started there. This is important for them. It's going to be meaningful production. It's got it's potentially a very substantial basin. Therefore, they could have lots of upside. They have 30% interest in this, and so I think that that this one should be watched out for. As we go through December, we'll probably get their upgrade, which will say exactly what they are producing, because they're literally taking the liquids off and so on at the moment. I think that they'll produce a very reasonable amount from here. The company in total is targeting 7,000 barrels a day by the year end. I think they'll get through that easily enough. And with the southern stuff and now the added in northern stuff, they'll look to pick up that number quite substantially. I think that expect an exploration well in the first half of 2018 in the Llanos Basin. Potentially lots of upside from there.
Lovely. That's Mercer. AMER. Anything else, Mike? Is that it?
Well, just wanted to point out, I didn't know whether you saw it on Friday, but Sound Energy had a thing called a fireside chat. where instead of a conference call, they went on a special site that looked like a sort of fancy WhatsApp message, where the CEO, the exploration director, and the CFO sat down and took written questions on coming up on the screen from anybody who wanted to sign in and be on the thing. Now, the interesting thing, this is just a talking about sort of distribution of news and how people like Sound are treating retail shareholders significantly better nowadays. There were over 600 people on this call, or whatever you like to call it, and they answered nearly 200 questions. It may be a bit like you guys who are sort of shaking up your part of the world. This is shaking up getting in touch and keeping close to your retail shareholders. A very interesting one, which shareholders can go on and go onto the website and just get reel back and look at every single question.
They got asked
everything. Most of them they could answer. Things are looking very prospective still in Morocco. And you can look at everything that they wanted to talk about, from the board members' salaries to the latest drilling plans for next year and so on. So just to say, that's another new thing for retail shareholders, which I know you're very keen on.
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, in the digital age where you can be in, you know, anywhere in the world, essentially, and communicate, you know. I mean, it's obviously nice to go to an investor event, you know, again, meet the other people, meet the other investors, and shake the hand of the CEO, look him in the eye. But sometimes it isn't practical, is it? And if you can do it via, you know, via sort of, some kind of chat like that, or a podcast, then it's ideal, because, you know, people driving to and from work and the commutes can listen to it or read it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just very, you know, I think very forward-thinking. And it's just convenience, you know. And life these days is very busy, so anything that's convenient will work, you know. So
And the more that companies do to look after their shareholders, the better it is.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that, to, you know, communication is a two-way thing, and I think, you know, if you've got someone investing money in you, you should take the time and effort, like Sound is there, obviously, to communicate with those people, because they're risking their capital. So here we are. Malky, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Yeah, look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.